Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network. This is Mr. Michael Dean, the Chief Anarchy Officer of the Micronation of Nestlandia, and we have an interesting interview today. It's our first ever interview where we're talking to a head of state. We have the Right Honorable Kevin, your last name is Baugh or Baugh?
Baugh, actually.
Baugh. Kevin Baugh. President of the Micronation, the Republic of Molossia. Did I pronounce your nation right?
Yes, you did. Very good.
Excellent. Excellent. So tell us a little about Molossia and how long it's been around and how it came to be.
All right. Okay, well, Molossia is a micronation, which is a small self-declared nation. It's not really recognized by any of the larger nations that are out there. We founded it in 1977. Of course, back in those days, there was no internet, so it wasn't online like it is now, where you can see a gigantic website. It was just all on paper. My friend James and I saw an old movie called The Mouse That Roared.
I love that movie. I was gonna ask you about that movie. That's a great movie.
Absolutely, it was definitely the inspiration because it kind of caught our imagination. This tiny country that basically invades the U.S. expecting to lose, and does so with knights and chainmail and so forth, and instead actually wins a war. And we were really, really taken up by the idea. We thought it was very, very clever. So we decided we'd start our own country. In 1977, it was sort of the precursor for Molossia. It was called the Grand Republic of Wolstein. And then he was the king, I was the prime minister. And then he went off to another school and did other things, and I stayed with it. And then once we obtained land here in northern Nevada, an actual physical location, we were able to give our nation a little more depth than reality, if you will, and of course, also put it online so people could see, so the world could see it. And we raised the flag over the territory and renamed it Molossia, and we've been doing it ever since, pretty much here in this area since 1998.
Did you start in Southern California with your first one?
No, actually, I was in Oregon. I moved around a lot when I was a kid. So we were living in Oregon at that time. I was born in Southern California.
Yeah, Southern California is where my wife and my micronation, our nation of two, Nestlandia, the land of the nest, started. And California is not a great place to be sovereign in any way. They don't like that there.
I think you could do it to a certain extent just about anywhere. But it depends on what the restrictions are, especially if you live in a community, with the community regulations and so forth.
Yeah,
would be some restrictions there.
Yeah, I think that the average homeowners association would probably be more of an impediment to a micronation than the state around it. Those things are horrible sometimes.
Right.
I had one where in Southern California, where we couldn't change a light bulb. I mean, literally, like, someone tried to break in our house and we wanted to put safety lights on the back of the house, and we had to get lawyer letters for 9 months threatening them with suing them to get them to put a light on the house we owned.
Yes, they are very restrictive. And that's one of the huge advantages that we have where Molossia is. We're actually very rural, about 35 miles southeast of Reno, out in the desert. So we don't have very many restrictions at all. And so we can pretty much do what we please.
Are you a gun guy?
No, not particularly. We actually have a couple of old muskets, and that's about it.
Muskets? That is really cool.
Yeah.
Really? Do they fire?
Yeah.
They work?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and they're in great shape. We take care of our weapons.
Are they? They're owned by your Navy, the Rubber Raft Navy?
Right, absolutely. They are actually used by the Molossian Naval Infantry. Last time that we used those was in 2006, I think, when we were at war with a nation called Mustachistan.
Oh, did you have a boarding party? I know muskets were often used historically for boarding ships aggressively or defending against aggression.
We actually did a naval sortie where the naval infantry charged ashore from the MS Wombat, which is our flagship. So it's kind of a cool thing. There's movies of the war online, because the war, of course, was staged. It was really more of a political commentary than it was an actual war. So we wanted to sort of say a little something as we went along the line. Did all the usual stuff that wars do with medals and so forth like that.
Do you pay property taxes to the surrounding nation of Nevada?
Well, we do, but we don't call it taxes. We call it foreign aid. That way we maintain that semblance of sovereignty, you know, because, you know, one country can't pay taxes to another. So instead we give the United States foreign aid, and you know, they need it. You've seen the roads. they use all the help they can get.
Do you participate in politics in Nevada or America? Do you vote in those countries and states?
Well, all Molossians are actually dual citizens, you know, with the United States. And so and because we're such a tiny country, we're very dependent on the U.S. for pretty much everything. So because, you know, you really can't, like, stand alone when you only have, you know, 1.3 acres of land. And so because we are dependent, we're very interested in what's going on in the world over the border. And so, yes, we definitely make an effort to participate in American politics and, you know, size things up and so forth and exercise that, right? We want to make sure that America's happy with us so we can be happy with them and we can all get along and not have our little country crushed someday by, you know, somebody.
Yeah, especially now that they're getting drones everywhere. They say that they're not arming them yet, but they're bringing them here to watch everybody.
Yeah, I actually watched some stuff like that on the news and seen that. But we're actually thinking about getting our own drone, and so maybe we can keep an eye on them.
Have you looked into quadricopters? Those are the cheaper way to do it.
I'm not sure if that's what it's called, but I know it's one that has like four little propellers.
Yeah,
like
rotors.
Like a little safety ring on the outside and so forth. It's got a camera on it. I really like that idea.
Yeah,
I think we might be going that route someday.
Yeah, they can hover. I did see your dual nation rocket launches with your Estes rockets. What's the other micronation that you participated in that with?
Iceland was the other micronation. They came down. That was an extremely hot day. They were down at the end of June, I think it was. And we always go out to this dry lake to launch our rockets because if you launch it in Molossia anymore and it lands in somebody's yard, it might set fire to their sagebrush. So we don't want to start a brush fire. But yeah, we do actually launch rockets on a regular basis. The most recent time we did, I think, was in September of last year. We tried to launch three rockets, each of them with some glitter in the national colors, blue, white, and green. And the rockets, of course, worked fine because we have a lot of experience in our space program, but the glitter didn't work out that great. It was really hard to see 300 or 400 feet up in the air. So that's kind of a work in progress.
What is the League of Small Nations, and what is your relationship with them?
Well, the League of Small Nations was originally designed to, support those nations, those micronations, that actually have land, actually have territory, and to build them up and mutually sustaining. Also, we wanted to try and do something real. There are a large number of, there's actually a large number of other micronations out there, and it's very common for those micronations to want to get together in some sort of micronational UN. And the problem is that the vast majority of micronations are solely online, usually handled by one or two young people that don't have any resources. So having a micronational UN, even if you wanted to be in one, it's not going to do anything. They can't travel from one place to another to support another micronation in times of emergency or provide aid or something like that. It's not realistic. But we as we often do in Molossia, we sort of ask ourselves, well, what if? What if we could do that? Because we do have a little more in the line of resources than your average micronationalist, and so do most micronations whose populations, possess land, actual physical land. Usually those folks have, resources. They afford at least a mortgage or something. I don't know. Anyway, I kind of rambled there a little bit, but the idea was to do something real and make that happen, and then we got caught up in internal politics that didn't really work out. So we're sort of a part of the League of Small Nations, but we don't do anything with it, and it's kind of dead, to be honest with you. It's not very active because it just sort of self-destructed.
Rambling is encouraged on this show, by the way.
Okay.
No need to apologize. And so the League of Nations, didn't that go back to like World War One though? I mean, the League of Small Nations.
Well, the League of Small Nations was really our creation, used the same verbiage for the League of Nations, League of Small. I mean, again, it was just sort of a organization, put together to try and do something better for the world. My idea was to join up as a group and participate in a charity of some kind. And we ended up doing that anyway through a group called Kiva, which is sort of a microfinance organization. And so we can, donate to entrepreneurs and businessmen and so forth around the world, and they props up their business a little bit, and then once they make a profit, they pay back into Cuba, and then we roll that money that we donated originally to that first guy to another guy, and so on and so forth. And we've actually done it, I want to say maybe 10 times, 8 or 10 times. We get our money back, then we turn right around and put it back into another entrepreneur and so forth like that.
Nice.
It kind of helps make the world a little bit better place, and you know, these are usually third world countries, and we consider Malawi to be a third world country, because we don't have any paved roads or hospitals or airports or anything. So we're kind of supporting each other in a manner of speech.
I like it. I think where my question being wrong about the League of Small Nations being started after World War I is on the Wikipedia page for your nation. It talks about you planning to revitalize the League of Small Nations, and you click on that link and it goes to something else, which is called the League for Small and Subject Nationalities, which was kind of a UN for tiny nations after World War I. And
I've never heard of that. I'll be honest with you, disclaimer, I originally built that Wikipedia page, but I don't maintain it because I think it's kind of bad form for you to maintain your own page when it's kind of, self-serving.
I'm going to remove well-beloved editor on Wikipedia, and I'm going to remove that wrong link and leave the sentence as is and just take that link out.
Well, as long as you're in the neighborhood, there's a note on that Wikipedia page that talks about not paying our taxes.
Yeah.
And, of course, we don't really like to talk about the tax thing at all. It comes up a lot in conversation, but that's why we prefer to call it foreign aid. But that note on there is totally incorrect. Of course you pay your taxes. If you don't pay your taxes, they take your land away. And, that's just kind of what happens. So, much as we'd like to be strong enough to be able to stand up and say, no, we're not doing that, it's just not realistic with our small size. And, we're not particularly belligerent anyway. So we want to survive and grow and be strong and have the police show up in their front yard and offer their land off or something.
Although I pay my taxes too, and I don't want to, but I do, and do it 100% as I am told to, because I don't want to get droned or, have my land stolen. But, I don't believe it would be belligerent or aggressive to not pay taxes personally. What do you think?
Probably not overtly belligerent, but I think the at the end of it, you're going to have to stand up and say, I'm not going to do it in front of some, official person, judge or whatever, and, whoever the long arm of the law is locally. And I think that would eventually create some sort of belligerence. I don't think it's going to end well. So we sort of smooth things over by making it happen. And here in Nevada, Malawi being separate, but anyway, in Nevada, there's no state tax. There's only property tax. So the only taxes, or the only foreign aid we pay, if you will, is property tax, and then, of course, federal taxes. So we're not overly burdened in Nevada with taxes. It's not that big of a deal here as it would be elsewhere.
Yeah, that's one reason we left California, my wife and I, and moved to Wyoming. We don't have state tax either, and taxes are, sales tax are relatively low. Is there a queen of your nation?
I'm sorry? Oh, the first lady, actually. Well, I'm the president. So she's the first lady. Her name is Adrienne, and she's the love of my life, as well as being my definitely my second in command in the nation.
Aww.
And the other half of my brain too.
That's sweet.
Every now and again, I get stumped kind of with an idea, a new thing I want to do with Malawi, and she'd be like, "Well, what about this idea here?" So, she definitely helps me out, and definitely my other half.
That's excellent. Excellent.
It's good to have a partner.
Yeah,
I tended to do it alone for a very long time. And now I have someone who's right by my side helping me out.
Did you meet her because of the nation, because of publicity it had? Or did you know her before that or outside of that?
Technically, yes. Not necessarily because of it. We actually met through Facebook. But she knew what she was getting when she contacted me, through Facebook. Or actually, I think it might have been MySpace, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, but she knew what she was getting because she Googled me. And she figured out, oh my gosh, that guy's he's the leader of this country. And she said, that's pretty cool. And she's totally been right along with it the whole way. She's very much involved. A lot of micronational spouses just kind of nod and shrug and kind of go along with it. But she's very involved and very active and has her own ideas of things she wants to do.
Excellent.
With the nation. And I really enjoy that immensely.
Excellent. So I'm trying to encourage people to start micronations. I really like the idea of it. I think it should spread. I guess I can't, a reason we can't give is you don't have to pay taxes. I was hoping that that was accurate, and I will edit that for you, but after this interview comes out on Saturday, so I can link to it, because otherwise they'll call it original research and delete it.
Yeah, very true.
And that's a roundabout way for me to put my link to my podcast on Wikipedia without it being removed. It works out for everybody. It's free market commerce between two micronations with no money involved, just helping each other out.
Works for me.
Yep. But I guess, can we tell people that meeting the love of your life, I don't want to say meeting chicks, I want to say meeting the love of your life, is that could be a possible advantage for people to want to start a micronation?
You know, to be honest with you, no. I mean, it worked out really well for me, but basically, micronationalism is kind of a guy thing. It's not really. There are very few women, ladies in the micronational world. At least not as primaries. I mean, there's plenty of wives and girlfriends out there, of course. But you know, as the actual leaders and so forth, I really only know two women that are leaders of micronations, and I interact on a regular basis with dozens and dozens of micronations. So. It's not really a girl thing, so it's probably not a good place to be turning if you're looking for, finding your soulmate. However, it worked out well for us, so I guess you could say that if it's a qualifier and you're looking for your soulmate and she really likes the idea and she's along with it, then you've found the right person. If that makes sense.
Yeah, my wife is the love of my life, and we formed the idea of Nestlandia as a nation of two because we both used to be very social people, and I'm very social on the internet now and do a lot of podcasting, and we're actually getting syndicated soon for radio, for actual radio.
Very nice.
What's that?
Very nice. That's really cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, once we get some stations, I will let you know and have you call in. We don't do interviews on that show, but I will have you call in and tell them to bump you to the front of the phone line because I'd like to get you on some real, I know you've been on some real radio, but I want you on more. But my wife and I used to do a podcast called Radio Free Nestlandia, which I guess was the national media service, the state media of Nestlandia. But she did really well at it. But yeah, I was kind of my thing, and she just went along with it because she loves me and wasn't just, wasn't just like, okay, I'll do that. She was really into it, but she kind of fell out of it and got busy with other things. And, there's a guy that I do a podcast with in Texas. We do it over the internet, and, he's really into it. And so I have my art partner now and my wife, and she helps out with things. She has a really nice voice, and she does ad copy and promo copy and, reading things, voiceover. But yeah, it's kind of a guy thing in this house.
It kind of is. I mean, we have the same thing. I mean, the first lady, she actually, we have Radio Malacia, which is our short little radio show we do once a month, and she does the news for us. She sort of participates in part of that, just because I wanted to break it up. If it's always my voice and my face on everything, the nation doesn't nearly have as much depth or credibility. So it's nice to have more faces and, more interaction with the rest of the citizens of the country. So that was kind of an important thing. And then, of course, she has her own other ideas of, craft things and so forth that she wants to contribute to the nation and helps me out with my brainstorming when I'm coming up with the new ideas and so forth. So it's a good partnership. Works out very well.
Excellent. Excellent, Your Excellency. Now, before we go to a very short break here, how can people listen to radio? Is it Radio Free Malacia or Radio Malacia? What is it?
It's just Radio Malacia. Because we don't have an unfree part of Malacia. All of Malacia is unfree because of the dictatorship. So anyway, this is Radio Malacia, and if you go to the webpage, there's a link I think on the ticker in the middle of the page. That's www.malacia.org, you can click on the left, which is media, and it says Radio Malacia right on there. And we usually have the current show and the previous month's show on there. It'll have the previous month's news, and it'll have music and commercials and so forth. It's good stuff.
Well, I'm going to send you a PDF, the free PDF that I published on starting your own actual radio station for $250. And out in the desert there, and there's not a lot of population density, but it would travel, and it's more or less quasi-legal. It depends on what setting you put the micro wattage at, but You know, you could do it. You could do it legally and reach. You know, you could probably bug 8 or 10 of your neighbors with it, and you could do it quasi legally and probably bug a couple hundred of your neighbors with it. If you want to do real radio, you have any interest in that? I'll send you the PDF.
Yes, yes. Actually, please send it on. I was thinking about that the other day, especially if it's just bugging 8 or 10 of the neighbors. That'd be awesome because then it would technically only really be in the country.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, that's kind of how radio stations are usually, you know, centered on the nation that they're in and not really focused on outside the country. So I like that idea. Sure. Send it on. Absolutely.
I will. Yeah. I'm the guy to talk to. I know a lot about radio and about audio, and I will send you, I did a really long blog post with like, and it doesn't just say, you know, you need to buy a transmitter and you need to buy a low pass filter. It's like, here's an Amazon link of the thing you should buy. Here's another, here's a new link. Yeah. All right. So we're going to take a 2-minute break here and then come back for part 2 of 3. All right.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes. Follow twitter.com/fiendtorrents to grab the past episodes and new ones as they post. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents, while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding the Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down. That's twitter.com/fiendtorrents.
Did your world collapse when Ron Paul didn't win? Don't keep hoping for some great man to fix government through government. Complete your evolution today to full-on anarcho-capitalist. Reward your brain with the Freedom Fiends and quit breaking your heart with some politician. While the libertarians argue,
but who would build the roads?
The Freedom Fiends have already built the roads and moved on to making the great media content of the libertarian paradise. FreedomFiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com.
So, Kevin, President Kevin, how you doing?
Yes. Good. I'm well. How are you?
I'm excellent. You look like you're having a lot of fun with this. I love the pictures of you on Wikipedia and elsewhere. And if you want to send me a different picture, if you have any updated ones or more ceremonial ones you want to send, I'll use them instead for the blog post for this podcast episode that comes out this Saturday.
Okay, sure.
Got a question about the rock star of Micronations, Sealand. Have you ever had any contact with them?
No, not necessarily. Sealand is an interesting bird, really, because they, you know, when they started their whole deal, it was all about pirate radio, and then it sort of spun into, you know, being its own country and being a principality and so forth like that. But honestly, they really never did anything, I guess, at least in my opinion, really never did anything consistently cool with it. They just sort of existed, and, you know, as that weird, you know, historical anomaly off the coast of England. And since Prince Roy died, a few months ago, I think, his son is basically running the country. Of course, neither of them have actually lived on the offshore platform of Sealand itself for forever, because, you know, it's cold and drafty and wet and in the middle of the ocean and about the size of a basketball court. So, you know, that sounds like a lot of fun. So now that Prince Roy's gone, what's his son's name? I can't remember his name is. Anyway, he basically runs it as a tourist attraction, and he charges exorbitant amounts of money for people to go out there and actually tour this old World War II gun platform, somewhere between $3,000 to $5,000, just to go out in an open boat out in the middle of the ocean and climb on this old drafty platform, walk around it for a few minutes and see it, and then you're out. And basically, if you don't pay, you don't go. So, you know, we're not about that in Malaysia at all. I mean, we have a few souvenirs you can certainly buy, but it's not a prerequisite to come to our country. You know, we just want to know in advance before you show up during tourist season. Otherwise, come on down. it's easy.
But so, don't they actually have some like quasi recognition from Britain?
They do. What happened was back in the 80s, I think it was the 80s, 70s or 80s anyway, they had a number of Sealand citizens that were, most Sealand citizens that are, you know, citizens of the country don't actually live there, of course, because the country does. But they were like Germans. I think they were German citizens of Sealand. And they came and tried to take over. They staged a coup. And they took over the actual gun platform. And then Prince Roy found out, and he hired some mercenaries. I think they were mercenaries. Anyway, something along this line happened, and came and threw the Germans out, but kept one or two.
Yeah,
and he kept them as hostages.
And he'd accepted a passport, so it was considered treason legally, right, in international law.
Right, right. And so what happened was that the German government complained to the British government and said, "Hey, you know, this thing is happening." And the British government's like, "It's not really our problem because it's outside our territorial area." So by doing that, the Germans had to negotiate directly with. With Sealand itself, and that sort of gave them, I guess, tacit recognition. I mean, not really, but kind of.
Yeah.
And you know, because anytime a larger government has to actually acknowledge a micronation is jump all over that as hey, now I've got diplomatic recognition. Large government may not see it that way at all.
Yeah. Well, they're probably the only micronation in recent history who's gone beyond taking on the ceremonial trappings of a nation and actually done what I think nations do, which is why I don't like nations, but, you know, actually committed an act of aggression or a military coup and not been wiped off the face by Britain's Royal Navy, which I think they would be now if they tried that, but things have changed.
I think they would be too. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, on that point, I believe they actually fired on, I don't think it's the British Navy, but I think they have some form of Coast Guard. They actually fired on the Coast Guard, British Coast Guard, when they came out there to inspect the buoys or something in the estuary, and they nothing really happened. I think they might have tried to take them to court or something, but nothing really happened.
Yeah.
So they got a lot of street credit, but
that wouldn't fly now. And you know, I think the reason they got away with it then is because England kind of has a long history of a certain amount of acceptance of rich people acting crazy.
Right.
You know,
yeah. England's very tolerant of its eccentrics.
Yeah.
And,
as long as they have, as long as they have money, otherwise they're bums.
Yeah,
but
totally.
You know.
Well, you know, I don't think Prince Roy really ever had that much money. You see the place is kind of a dump, but it's, I mean, it's all right, but whatever. I think it's just, they just tolerated him, and it was just easier, to ignore him and let him do his thing than it was to go through all the effort of, you know, causing a big stink and taking him to court and everything. There was a book that was written a few while back in the 70s. It's called How to Start Your Own Country by Erwin Strauss. That's his name. Anyway, one of his, and it's kind of detailed. It actually references a bunch of micronations that were more or less around back in the 70s, most of which are not around now. But he has a couple of salient points, and one of them is that governments don't do anything until they have to. And in the case of Prince Roy, they didn't really have to. I mean, if he's going to fire on the Coast Guard, well, then just don't send Coast Guard boats out there anymore. You know, it's easier than going to all that work and all the guy in, you know, off that, you know, mid-ocean gun platform, which was really super hard to assault and get a person out of, and it probably would have cost lives and who knows what. So let him be. So
yeah, well,
worked out for it in that way.
I mean, they actually built it in a place that was built to resist attacking armies, which was probably a smart move on their part, you know. And I believe there's something about the fact that Britain built those platforms in violation of international law, which gives some credence to the fact that Sealand is there now, maybe. I've heard something like that.
Well, when they built the, especially Sealand, I'm not sure about the other ones, because there were several of them very similar to Sealand, but when they built the Sealand itself, it was called Rough Tower, I think, and it was a sea fort with anti-aircraft guns on top or something along that line. Anyway, but it was outside the territorial waters at the time, which was only 5 miles at that point. Now, of course, they've extended their territorial waters to, I don't know what it is, 15, 20, 25 miles, something like that. But yeah, at the time it was in international waters, but it was also during war. So what are you going to do?
They make their own rules.
All kinds of rules when you're at war, you know?
Yep.
So
So aren't you at war with East Germany? Didn't you call someone and wake them up when there was an East Germany?
Right. Actually, the origins of the East German War are a little bit vague, but at the time in the early 80s, I was stationed with the U.S. Army in West Germany, when there was a West Germany. And we frequently had to go up and stand a post, so to speak, whenever something happened on the other side of the border. You know, there'd be some saber rattling, and we'd all go get in our tanks and go to our mobilization spot and wait. And I'm pretty sure I got woken up in the middle of the night and did not appreciate that. So at that time, I was still a prime minister of Goldstein, and so I declared war on East Germany.
I thought you woke them up. They woke you up.
Pretty much. I mean, these Germans didn't, but the Army did, and it was in response to something, some sort of, you know, Warsaw Pact, or saber rattling.
What year were you in Germany, stationed there?
I was stationed there from 82 and 83, and then I was stationed there again in 89 to 93, I think it was. But, you know, by 93, of course, it was all gone. All that stuff was all gone. But I forgot about it, basically. And, you know, having created the war declaration, you know, life goes on. I packed it away in my stuff, and then a few years ago, I discovered this piece of paper. It was coffee stained and so forth, and I'm like, oh, I'll take a look at this. And I did a little research, and I found out that there is a tiny piece of East Germany that still exists, at least technically. Back in the 1970s, the government of Fidel Castro, leader of Cuba, gave a small island off the coast of Cuba to East Germany in a sort of a, you know, gesture of friendship, if you will, something like that. And, when the unification came around in 1991, that wasn't addressed in the treaty because I think it was considered symbolic or so and so forth. So basically, that tiny piece of territory still belongs to East Germany, even though East Germany itself doesn't exist. And so we are essentially at war with an uninhabited island off the coast of Cuba.
Nice.
Anyway, we have a strong sense of irony
in
Wallachia, and so we have absolutely no problem continuing a war that against a country that really doesn't exist.
I was in Germany in 91 on Reunification Day. I was touring with a rock band from San Francisco. I was a singer in a band called Bomb. And we're actually in Schweinfurt, of all places, on Reunification Day. Do you know Schweinfurt?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's where the Army, there's an Army base there. Were you stationed there?
No, we were actually stationed down in, Ludwigsburg in Stuttgart, in southern Germany.
Ah, yep. And it was a very interesting day to be there historically, but it was very, very statist to me. It was, and I wasn't, I'm basically an anarcho-capitalist now, which is a person who's, I don't know. Do you know much about anarcho-capitalism?
I sure do, yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I'm basically a peaceful guy who thinks that the less government, the better, to the point of no government would be better than governments. And the Reunification Day in Schweinfurt was the most, I don't know if I want to say disgusting, but the most overt show of statism and nationalism I've ever seen. Like everybody hugging everybody from, you know, basically the American soldiers trying to hug the German girls, but, you know, East German, West German, etc. Now, I really would have liked to have been there a year earlier or whenever it was, a little earlier when the first hole in the wall came down. Because to me, the wall was just the biggest symbol of the horrors of statism. And did you patrol on the west side of the wall at all?
No. We actually, because where we were stationed, we would occasionally go over closer to the Czechoslovakian frontier, back when there was a Czechoslovakia. And so we were more in that southern Germany type area. We didn't actually get up in the area along the East German border because that wasn't our area to patrol. But of course, you know, we were definitely there when the when the wall came down, and that was pretty, it was pretty intense. It really, really was. It was kind of an amazing thing. One minute,
wow.
You know, you're standing there and you're sort of facing down, you know, this great Soviet threat right over there. And the next minute there is no Soviet threat.
Yeah. And wasn't there some accident as to how it happened? Like some news reporter was talking to some military leader and they were talking about discussions of when it was going to happen in the coming months. And I don't know if there was a misunderstanding of language or if it was just he wasn't supposed to be speaking for it. And he said, no, it's coming down now. And all of a sudden, his underlings, East German soldiers, opened up the gate and let people through.
That's pretty much what happened. I'm not sure if it was an accident or if it was sort of a, you know, a tacit recognition that this is going to happen. Let's just do it.
A planned accident.
I think it really did happen that way. But, you know, the key point was that once it started happening, you know, became that sort of, you know, people's movement to knock the wall down, the government, the Ethiopian government, did not oppose it. They went with it. And,
yeah,
of course, you know, once that crack starts in the wall, well, I mean, figuratively, not literally, but once that crack starts in the wall, there's really no turning back, because then the only other alternative was, you know, start shooting people, and nobody wants that. So I think that it was a pretty amazing,
yeah,
it really was a pretty amazing time.
Yeah, and literally cracks formed in the wall. Like that night or the next night, I believe people went home and got pickaxes and started putting holes in the wall.
Right. Started chopping holes in the wall, started pushing down big slabs.
Yeah.
Well, it made it with a bunch of individual slabs. And so they were able just to kind of push them down once they made a decent hole, and then reaching through and handshakes and everything. It was very moving. It really was. Pretty incredible experience.
So on a macro nation level, I guess this is a serious question. We've been having fun with all this, but a serious question. What do you think is the optimum amount of government?
I always think that less is a little bit better. But then I turn around and I see how people behave, and I wonder, you know, I point this out to the first family, the kids, and, you know, people do, I guess you'd say, people do dumb things, and that is where rules come in. And rules shouldn't necessarily have to happen if people do what they're supposed to be doing, but then they do dumb things, and now we have to have a rule. So that rule says, no, you can't walk that close to the edge of the cliff, because you're not smart enough to realize you're going to fall off the cliff. So somebody had to put up a rail. Now someone had to put up a sign, you know, that kind of stuff. So
a rail,
it's unfortunate that people don't, they don't accept reality and personal responsibility.
Yeah, rails are good. Rails are good and signs are good, but making a law, don't fall off this cliff, isn't going to keep anybody from falling off a cliff.
Well, no, I know. I'm just using it as a, you know, as an example, but, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, people behave, people misbehave, and then that basically spoils everybody else. And, you know, that begets a law, which begets another law, which begets another law. Before you know it, you've got millions of them. And so many that nobody really even knows, you know, what's going on anymore.
Do you ever feel encroached upon by the lands of the surrounding territory?
No, actually. We're pretty much left alone because we don't encroach ourselves. We tend to, I guess, keep to ourselves, mind our own business kind of thing. And, you know, we don't really pose a threat. And again, that goes back to what I was saying from the Johann Strauss book. Again, governments don't do anything until they have to. Well, we don't give the U.S. government a reason to, you know, to come crack on us. And so that way we're allowed to, you know, have our nation as much as we possibly can, you know, short, obviously, of international recognition. But it's always a goal. It's always something we'd like to have someday, is to be recognized as a sovereign nation. It's unlikely, but, you know, it's definitely a goal of ours.
What do your neighbors think of you?
Well, actually, we have a really good relationship with most of our neighbors. The ones that actually, you know, pay attention to us, most keep to themselves. But we have a pretty positive relationship, so it's a good thing. And also in the local community, you know, we're known. Oh, you're that guy that has his own country. Oh, yeah, that's me. You know, that kind of thing. Because we appear in two parades every year, one in the town of Dayton, which is just a few miles away from Alaska, and one in the town of Carson City, which is about 20 miles from Alaska, but it's also the main parade of the year on Nevada's Admission Day. And so pretty much a humongous crowd sees us go by when we go by in that parade.
Awesome.
So we're pretty well known.
I think that you do everything that a country does that's good and none of what a country does that's bad, which is you don't aggress on other people, right?
No, and we really try to. I mean, officially, Mossad is a dictatorship, but I'm not really the dictator type. It's really more for show.
Yeah.
You know, we try to have a fairly, you know, easygoing bunch, because everybody in the country is pretty much, you know, heading in the same direction, you know, in their brains. You know, they're all going the right way, and we don't have to crack on them and be that kind of guy.
I find it really telling that nations call treaties non-aggression pacts. It's basically saying, well, what we do is aggress, but in this one instance, we won't.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. Well, you know, it's interesting. The whole international diplomacy thing is getting very entertaining.
You're not taxing your neighbors, right?
What's that?
You don't tax your neighbors.
No, no, they're Americans. They do what they do. And we're Molossians, and we do what we do. So we kind of coexist peacefully, let's put it that way.
Well, the nation of Nestlandia does recognize you now, so you can add one more micronation.
thank you.
I wanted to talk about Emperor Norton. I used to live in San Francisco, and there's a statue of him under the Transamerica Pyramid. He was, for people that don't know, basically a homeless guy that declared himself the emperor and protectorate of, what was it, California and Mexico, or do you remember?
Oh, no, the whole U.S. Yeah, he was the emperor of the United States and protector of Mexico. So, he pretty much claimed the entire country.
Yeah,
we kind of look at him as sort of the... I guess the patron saint of micronationalism, if you will, because he was really the first guy to have the idea that I'm the ruler of my own country, even though his own country was already a country. So it's a little bit different than, what Malafia's got going on and so forth. Still, he was very well respected in San Francisco. San Francisco, just like England, they love their eccentrics.
Yeah.
So, he was very, very well respected there. Even though, like you said, he was basically a homeless guy when he died. He had like $2 to his name and, a couple of hats and a suit. But he had a seat at the opera. He had free food, free clothes. The policemen tipped their hats to him. He stood in one time and stopped a lynching. He issued a number of proclamations, including, one establishing the bridge across the Oakland Bay and arm of the of San Francisco Bay. And, he was just a very creative person and apparently not a hard one to talk to either. He's very well read and, not the muttering crazy guy over there on the corner, but he actually believed that he was the emperor of the United States. And that's pretty much how they treated him in San Francisco. When he died, something in the vicinity of 20,000 people attended his funeral. And in San Francisco in 1880, that was a lot of people. So I think it's kind of a credit to the kind of person that he was that he got that sort of attention.
You have something named after him, right?
We have many things named after him. We have the basic unit of our measurement system. Yes, we have our own measurement system. It's called the Norton, which is basically the same length as my hand. And we also have a park in the backyard. We have a cannon. Our backyard is called Norton Park, that is. And we have a cannon. It's in Republic Square, which is called Emperor Norton. Actually, Emperor Norton II.
Do you fire?
Emperor Norton I?
Does the cannon work?
No, it actually wouldn't. I can't afford to buy a real cannon. Good Lord, our economy is too strong enough.
You could make one, but somebody from the U.S. federal government might show up and have an issue with it.
Yeah, or at the very least, the neighbors might complain about me firing it off in the morning. We don't want bad relations with them. And let's see, what else do we have? I'm asking my other hats or my other brain. Huh? Oh, and we have a fish, Emperor Norton the fish.
What kind of fish is that?
A beta. It's a beta.
Are they native?
Yeah, a beta. He's a fighter. He's a fighter. He likes to get angry at you when you.
Are they native or non-native? I'm assuming you don't have a lot.
Non-native.
You don't have an ocean or a stream?
No, actually. Malacca is completely landlocked. We do have a navy, but our navy actually mostly gets out on the waters, nearby waters in the United States. We don't actually have any standing water in Malacca unless it rains a lot. And that's usually not big enough for any of our vessels. And all of our vessels are inflatable rafts, but that's fine because it gets around just fine on the waters that we have in the area.
Excellent.
So, anyway, yeah.
Excellent. Well, let's take another little break and then we'll come back for part 3 of 3. All right?
Okay. Sounds good.
Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Are you tired of governments murdering people around the world? Stop using their money. There is an alternative. Bitcoin is a stateless free market non-political currency. Bitcoin cannot be inflated or controlled by any government. By using their money, you are helping the state. Stop doing it. You have an incredible alternative available now. Learn it, use it, spread it. Get started with Bitcoin at weusecoins.com. That's weusecoins.com.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon.
Your house is your property. You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. That proves you're smarter than most people.
So I noticed on your website, you have a notice to teachers on the entry page. And I was really dismayed that teachers use your website and your nation as an example of a fraudulent or fake website. And, you know, to the anarcho-capitalist in me, that just says, well, that's just the indoctrination system of the public schools trying to discredit anything that doesn't toe the line of what they, you know, the nation wants to teach the kids. How do you feel about that, and how have you responded to that?
Well, we put the notice on there because they're pointing out, they're very focused on Malafia not being a real place. And of course, that's incorrect. Malafia is very much a real place, and you can come here. Even if you don't think it's a country, it definitely physically exists. There's a building, there's several buildings, and people have lived here and so forth. We even had it to the point where it was questioned whether our snow was real. our snow is very definitely real. I wish it wasn't, but it is. So, I mean, that's why I put that disclaimer on there. I was like, okay, fine. If you want to use Malafia as a teaching tool, use it as a teaching tool to discuss the concept of sovereignty, some concept of personal sovereignty, you know, the different approaches to what makes a nation, not just as this is a fake website, end of discussion, you know, because that kind of sells us short, and it really aggravated me. So, yeah, that's kind of our point of view. I mean, I understand that they're trying to make a point, especially for younger students, of beware what you see on the internet. But we're not really, at least I don't feel, that we're really not really something that you need to be beware of. It's not as clear cut as they're painting, and so that's why I put it on there. And I have actually had teachers contact me since then. I put the disclaimer on there, the notice on there, saying, you know, that they do in fact now use it as a tool to talk about what makes up a country and the different approaches, you know, the theories of statehood, stuff like that, as opposed to, hey, it's just a fake website, move on, kind of thing. So at least I'm having a positive impact there.
Yeah, I mean,
appreciate that.
I mean, personally, I think that whitehouse.gov is a fake website, and that's not a partisan thing. I felt that way when George Bush was running it, and I feel that way now. You know, I mean, it's just a bunch of guys doing what you're doing, but aggressing on people. It's, you know, it's people declaring, saying, all right, I've decided this. I don't have to go through anyone else. Screw Congress. I'm going to write something down on paper, and this is how it's going to be from now on. And it hurts people. It doesn't help people most of the time. And,
right.
You know, and basically all laws are enforced at the barrel of a gun, in that if you disobey a law, you know, like say, if you don't pay your property taxes, people will come to your house and say, pay your property taxes. And if you say, get off my lawn, they're going to come back with people with guns. And if you say, get off my lawn, they're going to come in your house. And if you resist, they are going to point a gun to your head and take you away to a cage. So literally all laws are enforced at the barrel of a gun. And in your dictatorship, dictator is an ugly word, but you can be the dictator of your own living room as long as everyone that's living in that living room or comes into it agrees to your rules. You know, you're not aggressing on anybody. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think your website is a very real website. It's more real than much of the internet. And I think that what you're doing is more real than what nations do. I really do.
Well, thank you. I think, you know, for us, it's always a work in progress, because it's hard taking something that other people don't think is real and making it as real as possible, you know, without stepping over that line, because we don't want to get in that situation where they're coming through the door and, you know, taking us away. You know, so it's a real balancing act of trying to, you know, trying to make it as real as possible up to that final point where you can't really go any further without, you know, incurring somebody's wrath. And so, you know, that's always our struggle, I guess you could say. You know, but we're not particularly aggressive folks, so, you know, we're willing to go with the flow as long as we're, you know, allowed to do what we're allowed to do in our little corner of the world.
Excellent. Do you have any closing statements and or advice for anyone who wants to start their own micronation?
I guess we could probably go with a little bit of advice. I think, you know, we've covered some obvious points about, you know, like I said, kind of coloring within the lines, if you will, with the the government of the micronation around you. But you can do a lot up to that point. And we have in Molossi, I mean, our website has about 500 web pages within it. It's about 10,000 hits a day, on our website and so forth. You know, we fly our own flag. We have our own money and our own stamps. We sell souvenirs. We have tourists come and visit. So we have a really good time with Molossi. And I think that's probably the most important thing is to look at it from that point of view. To have a good time with it. Don't take it seriously because you don't want someone coming to your front door. Well, maybe you do, but I mean, that won't end well. Don't take it too seriously and see where you can go with it. And, you know, I feel in Molossi, we have made a very positive impact on the lives of a lot of young people that would like to start their own nation. And I'm very proud of that.
Excellent.
We've influenced people, participate in their local political scene, so forth like that. So I think you can do that, with a little bit of effort. And I think we've done that in Molossi, and I'm pretty proud of that.
You had me up until you said participate in their local political scene, but that's just my take on the whole thing. It's been really great having you on, and I'm going to publicize this wide and far. It's going to come out Saturday morning at 8 a.m. my time, which is 7 a.m. your time. I'll drop you an email with the details.
Perfect.
And I really appreciate having you on, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you, Your Excellency.
All right. You have a great one. Thank you.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Tired of the false economy? Want to carry real money in a form that people will dig getting? Don't Tread on Meme now has Freedom Fiends and Guns and Weed Silver Dime cards. Collect all four. Trade them with your friends. Freedom Fiends Silver Dime cards are also great for starting conversations with statists about liberty. Go to freedomfiends.com today and click the link at the top that says Silver Dime Cards. That's freedomfiends.com.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.